This is Carmen DeFalco on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Carmen and Yurko podcast, presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
It's Cap and Co. Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co. and ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
In the great city of Chicago. Thank you, Danny Zetterman, Chris Black. Another fun week with you guys. Thank you to our callers that played the fun game. Congrats to Chris for upsetting Carm yesterday.
Oh, still couldn't sleep last night.
And thank you to Mike Tannenbaum, who joined us on the show today. Next week, we've got Last Dance coverage to talk about. The Last Dance presented by Coors Light. Stay inside, buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com.
Love it.
Get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill. So Monday, we will be all over the Last Dance. We've got the NFL draft on Thursday, and we're going to slide in sometime to have a draft of the best football characters from the movie.
It's a good question.
From all movies, five rounds each. Yes,
that's a good count. I like that. That's
so
fun.
I'm going to try and trade up to the tops, but I'm going to try and go from 2 to 1 or 3 to 2, and give up future picks.
I want Shane Falco, the replacement. That's what I figured.
Because I figured that I get to hang with him and Brooke Langton, his girlfriend.
Now let me ask you this question: does this count? Dan Marino was in a movie.
But he played Dan Marino in the movie.
Right.
You got to be a character.
So you got to be a character. Okay. All right. So Dan Marino, you can't go and draft Dan Marino number one overall.
Paul Crewe would be a great one.
That's a good idea for next week. I really like that.
Like, if you wanted to take a bad pick, you could get Eddie Martell. He was the jerky quarterback who crossed the picket line in The Replacements.
Is that Dennis Quaid?
Eddie Martell was the guy Shane Falco showed up at halftime.
Oh yeah, that's right. Which one did Dennis Quaid play? That was the Any Given Sunday, where Dennis Quaid played the quarterback.
Correct.
Right? Yeah,
he was Cap Rooney.
Yeah, that's right. This is a good game for next week. I like that.
Isn't that great?
That'll be a fun exercise.
Danny and Chris, do your homework.
Good for you guys.
Come up with your picks. Cap Rooney.
That's really good. But it's got to be a character. Like, you can't go Brian Song and start taking Gale Sayers.
Correct.
Like, you got to be a character.
Got to be a character in
Bobby
the movie.
Bobby Boucher.
That's awesome. Here we go. Yeah. Bobby Boucher was a wrecking crew on defense. I might take him number one overall.
Yep.
That's brilliant.
Who was John Favreau's character on that Replacements? He was a pretty good linebacker.
He was. You're right.
Oh, yeah. He was the police officer.
Yeah.
Who played
this is so good.
Oh, God. What was his name?
I'm never going to be able to remember his name, but I know exactly what Yurko's talking about. He was all yoked up for that. Remember, Yurko?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looked like he was juiced up to the gill.
It did. John Favreau in The Replacements. Because the coach was Jimmy McGinty. It was
Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a good
movie. Very good. It'll be fun with the NFL draft next week.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I got to tell you who he played. I'll get it.
Yeah, you can find it. Daniel will find it. By the way, happy birthday to Zetterman.
Daniel Bateman.
Daniel Bateman, that's it. Have a good birthday weekend, Danny.
Is it today?
It's tomorrow.
Birthday? Tomorrow.
Oh, happy birthday to Danny.
Happy birthday, Danny.
I used to bring stuff in for Danny. I'd bring him, like, Danny and I used to live around the corner from this amazing pie shop in West Bucktown, Humboldt Park, called Bang Bang Pie Company.
So, Fat Cap, Danny got me to go there. I dropped him off. He was getting a haircut. I gave him a ride. And while I was waiting for him, he said, "You eat that stuff, go there." That pie shop was insane.
So I used to bring in like a pie for Danny, and then he started getting healthy. Not that he ever ate sweets that much, but he would partake in a piece of pie. Years ago. Then I'd bring him in like lox and bagels. I can't bring him anything anymore. What am I supposed to bring him, a cow?
Just bring him a side of beef.
I used to bring a big, beautiful from New York Bagel Company up the street lox plate with all the fixins, bagels, and Danny would eat lox and bagels. I can't bring him anything.
Well, he said
to bring him a side of beef. I didn't bring anything to Danny. I'm sorry.
We went out to dinner.
He doesn't eat anything except meat.
Every night at spring training, we had people with us for dinner, except the first night we were there. Danny and I ate at the hotel in this steak restaurant. And I looked him dead in the eye and I said, okay, Danny.
I'm going to have French fries.
Forget for a second that you live this amazingly locked-in diet life. If you could have one thing that you miss just once, what would it be? Bagels and lox.
Bagels
and I said,
lox,
kid, you weigh 160 pounds.
Have a bagel.
You got a six-pack. Have a freaking bagel.
Said, have an everything bagel with some lox on it for your birthday.
He can have lox all he wants.
Well, sure, the lox, but I mean, you need the you need the cream cheese in the bagel.
You need the schmear.
Of course, you got to have the whole thing.
But for your birthday, that's what you should have.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
He should be able to give in to himself, you know?
I was going
to
bring, I don't have any homemade bacon at home. Everything's closed anyway. I'm like, I got nothing to bring to Danny. I don't know. Yeah. So
what are you going
to
do, man?
He gets nothing but what the little boy shot at, as Yurko would say, bump kiss.
Right,
but happy birthday, Danny. Have a good weekend.
So, by the way, with the fourth pick in the first round of our draft, we select Clifford Franklin, wide receiver. Remember him?
Oh, yeah. Merkin loves that character.
Clifford Franklin, when he has all that.
Oh, yeah. The stick-em.
The stick-em all over him.
The line is great.
I look like I just.
Yeah, exactly.
With an elephant.
We'd have to go to, Necessary Roughness. Remember Scott Bakula's character, the old quarterback that comes back?
Scott Bakula.
Blake, tattoo somebody. Robert Loggia is the coach that goes and recruits him. Remember?
Robert Loggia. Cindy Crawford is your kicker.
Kathy Ireland.
Kathy Ireland is the kicker. She'd never see the field.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Never. She had some leg on her.
Danny and Chris, come up with your candidates. Anyway, all right, so Yerk, you can have 1 year added to your favorite all-time TV show. They'll bring another season back. What would it be?
Banshee.
Oh,
I never saw that.
You don't know what it is. Yeah, it's on Showtime. It's fantastic.
It's one of those hidden gems that everybody talks about.
It's available on Amazon Prime, but you got to pay for it.
I have Amazon Prime. I don't have to pay. I'm going to go watch it, Yerk.
Go get it, man.
I'm
going to
start watching that
one. The first, boy, I tell you what, man, there's some nakedness in that.
Okay.
It's nice and raunchy. You know, Game of Thrones with a little bit of the nakedness.
Sign me up. Yeah.
It's really kind of what helps it sometimes. You get plenty of that with Banshee, kid.
I got to watch it. Yeah. I need something new to start. I know The Wire, too. That's on my list.
So I am now going on episode 3, season 3 of Breaking Bad.
Episode 3, season 3. Yeah, you're getting into the best part of it now.
What a
great
show. Great
show.
Oh, my God.
You finally met Saul Goodman.
Yes.
Thank goodness.
Met Saul Goodman.
He's great.
And then the guy who is the owner of the Pollo's Chicken Place.
Yes, Gustavo.
Gustavo, who's like this meek monarch.
Gustavo, his character's got even more to do with the spinoff now, Better Call Saul, which he's in it a ton from the get-go.
So when
Los Pollos Hermanos.
When Walter White, remember when they tell him, Saul Goodman says, he doesn't want to meet with you. He can't figure out who, he said he was there, he was watching you. He goes, I was there for 8 hours at the restaurant. I never met the guy.
Right.
And then he's thinking, hold on a second.
Yes.
I know who it is.
That's Gus Fring.
That was
he's pretty badass.
So great.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Badass, man.
If I had to add one season, I think I'd go Sopranos. I mean, there are a lot of seasons, but
Are they running out of gas at the end?
I don't know. I thought it was still pretty great, man. Those characters were all so good. I mean, Paulie Walnuts and Christopher, I mean, you know, you could have.
Bobby Bacala died because he was playing with trains.
Yeah, so. They started clipping them all as they were wrapping up. Yeah, I mean, you know, Bobby, and then Christopher gets his the way he did. I mean, that wasn't an execution style thing.
Listen, if he was going to kill his sister, I'd say give me one more year.
Yeah, I couldn't stand her.
If he's going to kill Janet, then give me one more year because Janet deserves 6 bullets in her head.
Janice.
Whatever.
Yeah, I couldn't stand her. Which is the sign of a well-constructed character, I guess, right? Good acting and a good constructed character, because I couldn't stand her either.
Yeah. Everybody dies but her. Why?
Yeah.
Oh. That's the question you need to answer.
It's a tough thing when Bobby Bacala died. You know, they're all criminals anyway. I shouldn't say that. But, man, I love that show. God. I would go for another season.
If push came to shove and there had to be a final death in it, the choice would be between Tony dying and his daughter. I'd like to see the daughter get clipped, too.
I think Tony dies at the end. What do you guys think?
I don't think you can tell.
I do.
I think he dies.
Yeah, he didn't die, boys.
But that's why I don't mind the way it ended, you know? I really don't. I'm good with it.
They were running out of gas, boys.
They may have been. I think maybe he was ready for it to be done. You know, they're doing a movie, like a prequel to it.
Correct.
You know, he's about
like Gandolfini's character.
It's well, he's just a kid in this because it's about the, like the rise of his of Uncle Junior and his dad.
So he's
and
like Christopher Moltisanti's dad. When he was going hanging yeah. out on the corner.
It's called. I think it's called The Angels of Newark. Is that what it's called? I can't remember. I'd have to double check. Or The Saints of Newark, maybe. And it's like so. It's more in the '60s, Yerk, about when he was a little kid.
Right,
so it's
growing up.
Yeah.
The Many Saints of Newark.
That's it, The Many Saints of Newark.
Release date, September 25 of 2020.
All right, so later this year, hopefully it still goes. I mean, who knows with the, you know, if they got caught up in all this. I don't know if they've had a...
Cast includes Corey Stahl, Billy Magnussen, John Bernthal, Alessandro Nivola, and Vera Farmiga.
Vera Farmiga's awesome, and so is John Bernthal, so good cast. Yeah, I'm looking, and David Chase wrote it, I believe, so I look forward to that.
Yeah, written by Dave. Says, well, it's based on David Chase's work.
Oh, okay.
It does not say.
So he didn't write it? Okay. I thought he wrote it or he's produced it.
The screenplay is by Lawrence Connor and David Chase.
All right, good, yeah. So yeah. Chase has got a big part of it. He created it.
Ray Liotta's in it.
Oh, is he?
Yep.
There's a shock. Lobster movie without Ray Liotta? How does that happen?
Michael Gandolfini's in it.
That's the son. That's James' son, yeah. Can't wait.
Yep. Can you tell me who is Ray Liotta married to now that was married to a Chicago athlete?
Mark Grace's ex-wife.
That's correct.
Oh, is that right? To, what's her name? Lauren?
No. What's her name? To Michelle Grace from Peoria.
Oh, not the actress? That was the one he used to hook up with, right?
Right.
He used to hook up with the actress. That's
correct.
Right. My bad. Yeah.
And
so Ray Liotta's married to Mark Grace's ex-wife?
Correct.
Wow.
And so here's two great stories for you. My producer was Grace's roommate, Dan Filato.
It was Filato, yeah.
So we are at his townhouse one night. It's Filato, Grace, me, and the late Luigi Negroni from Carlucci's. We're watching The Tonight Show. Ray Liotta's on, and he brings his dog. Well, the dog was Grace's. He lost in the divorce.
Oh, my God.
And Ray Liotta's on going, yeah, this little dog, I love this dog. It's my dog. And Grace is like,
that's
you
my dog.
No good.
You
that's
son of a.
My dog. Yeah. But here's the best part. Michelle Grace, her sister, and another friend of theirs all grew up in Peoria. Grace met her when he was an A-ball player for the Peoria Cubs. The three of them make a pact. We're getting major league players.
Oh, my God.
They were better scouts than the Cubs have ever had.
I guess so.
Because she picked Gracie, another one picked Mike Bielecki, and another one picked Jeff Pico. All in AAA, and they all made the majors. The Cubs haven't scouted that well till Theo.
They can't get their own guys up to the majors.
Jeff
Pico. Jeff Pico, remember?
Yes.
Oh, my God. A cup of coffee?
No, Jeff Pico came up his first game as a pro. He threw a shutout, won 5-0 over the Reds. He got a staph infection, nearly died, and was never the same.
Oh, my God, is that right?
Yeah.
Jeff Pico.
Yep, Jeff Pico.
Classic.
Crazy.
Yes.
So, anyway, all 24, right. Boys.
24.
Watch it. It's a great show. I am out of here.
Have a good weekend.
You have a wonderful weekend. I sent Karm a recipe last night, by
it
the way.
It looked good, I got to say.
No one has ever thought of using these two things to get... Orange chicken.
I don't know about that, but I mean, you know, there's
orange
a
orange chicken. Nobody's ever thought about
there's
that.
There's a French dish called.
You go to a Chinese place, and
right?
It's called orange chicken.
Or like one of the most famous French dishes is duck à l'orange. That's duck and orange.
I was kidding you.
But your Brussels sprouts looked on point.
They were on point.
They looked like it. Well done.
Thank you.
It looked good. Thank I got to say, nice presentation.
Danny wouldn't have had them because I had a dollop.
Oh, stop
of
it. He would eat
maple syrup
no,
on it.
No, stop it.
He'll and the bacon.
He would have eaten.
Oh, spectacular.
We would have tied him up and forced him to eat it.
Yes, 100%. All right, you guys be safe and
all
healthy.
All right, have a good weekend.
We're back Monday to talk Last Dance and more. Have a great weekend. See ya.
It's Carmen and Yurko.
Sports talk while you're on the clock.
Do I exaggerate?
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
All right, it's Friday. Weekend's here. Make it a fun weekend. Keep it lively. Keep it exciting in quarantine. Do what you can to have some fun. Sunday night, we can't wait for it, right, Yerk? We've got The Last Dance. We're all very excited.
I am excited. I think you're going to have a captive audience for Sunday night.
I think the ratings are going to be enormous, right, Yerk?
We'll see what they are, Carm. I'm sure there are people out there that have cut cords that are trying to find every way in the world to be able to see that thing happen.
That's true.
Remember now, you used to be able to watch these things in bars where you'd have 50 to 60 to maybe 75 people in bars. Now everybody's home.
Yeah.
So you won't have that diffusion of ratings where, you know, people that would have normally have watched it at home were all congregated together watching in one place. So we're going to see what a true number is. So I'm excited. I'm excited to watch it. I hope he's as bad on Scott Burrell as they say is.
Sounds pretty bad.
That's the way that was. You know, no matter where you're at in any team sport, it was, you try to measure the individual. Sometimes it ended in a fight, you know. Okay, the kids won the scrap. Good. And everybody went through it. Everybody went through it, no matter who you were. You're the young kid coming up. You're going to play. You got to go through this to see what it's all about. Sometimes it's simple. Sometimes it's a little more complicated. But at the end of the day, everybody makes it through, not much unlike the salmon, swimming upstream, trying to avoid the grizzly bears. That's and everything right. And all the trappings that are to offer, so he could spill his seed on the roe that the female salmon lays.
Still can't believe those salmon die when that's all said and done.
It's all said and done, yeah. They live about 3 years. Their third year, they make that trek.
It's crazy.
And then it's over.
And that's it.
It's all over.
You know, it's like, really?
And
that's
then
it?
Those
that's
little
the end
ones
of it?
That were just inseminated, they become the salmons that do it 3 years later.
Wow.
It's good stuff, Carm. Well, it's good stuff.
We're going to ask Judd Bushler exactly what it was like. He's going to join us in about 35, 40 minutes. So it'll be fun to talk to Judd and get his thoughts on...
Maybe we can bring Judd on every Monday for a two-minute review of the two episodes.
If Judd's cool with it, we're cool with it. So he's going to join us.
Switch. We can go Judd. We can go Kerr. We can go whoever we want.
Yeah, the problem is getting Steve Kerr. We got to see if Judd can pull
some.
What's
he doing? What's Kerr doing today?
You know, pull some strings for us.
I mean,
what's
we might be able to get Steve Kerr once
exercises?
Over
he
5 weeks.
Today?
But,
it doesn't matter what he's doing. He doesn't have to do anything. He's Steve Kerr at this point, you know? Well,
nobody denies the fact that he's Steve Kerr.
Although he was on with Waddle and Sylvie a few weeks ago.
Did I say he was like Abdul Salam or something? Of course he's Steve Kerr. He didn't pull a Chris Jackson, did he?
No.
Is he Mahmoud Al-Rauf now?
Or Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. No.
Well, then he's still Steve Kerr, right?
But
he played on the Bulls?
Yeah, I don't know. We could try.
Just because
listen,
he won championships, don't think he's changed, Carm. He's the same guy. Yeah, he is.
Well, all I'm saying is he's a tougher booking. Let's put it that way.
Not for you. Not for Carmen DeFalco, he's not.
Oh, yes, he is. We've tried many times
not.
In the last couple of years to get Steve
you
Kerr
are
on.
The great Carmen DeFalco.
And we can't get him on. You know who we wanted to try to track down? We wanted to try to track down.
No Tippin Pippin?
No, Luke Longley.
Oh, he's because in Australia.
He is in Australia. I think Luke would be fun to talk to. But
how
Merkin,
about Kukoc, man?
Tony has an open invitation. He knows that. I don't think Tony likes doing a lot of stuff, though, does he?
He may know it. He'll reach out. Just tell him that Yurko wants him,
that's
kid.
True. He's a fellow
Croatian. Croatian connections, man.
Yeah. And Scotty has distanced himself from the Bulls, or I guess the Bulls are distancing. They're social distancing from Scotty. There was that little revelation because Teddy Greenstein had that podcast from, it actually goes back to a Thuzio event that was in February. And I guess Joe Cowley had reported about this too. I was not aware of it. I did not know it. I also don't think it's too big of a deal. I mean, Scotty's no longer an ambassador with the Bulls. Okay, Scotty is... found a little bit of a niche on TV. He's in Bristol and on the West Coast. I guess he's more on the West Coast. Doesn't Rachel tape her show on the West Coast, guys, or is she in Bristol?
No, she's
out West, right? Yeah,
that's why Nick's always on it.
That's why Nick's on so much, exactly. So Scotty, and we've seen Scotty in Bristol a few times over the years when we've been out there. Mm-hmm. He might be just hunkered down more out in the West Coast now. He's on the jump a lot. He's a big part of the NBA coverage for the network. So, I don't know that it could be a time thing. It could... don't care that much. The Bulls did Scottie Pippen a favor by bringing him back to be an ambassador, lest anyone think. And, you know, they're feuding with another one of their former players. The Bulls did Scottie the favor by bringing him back to be an ambassador. They also did him a favor giving him $11.5 million his final 2 years when his knees were shot to come back and, you know, cash a check a few more times and try to mentor Tyson and Eddie along. So the Bulls have done Scottie plenty of favors.
It was to put a little money in his pocket because he seemed to have made some unwise investments.
Correct.
Yes.
They've done plenty of favors for Scottie Pippen. So lest anyone think that, shame on them.
His ambassadorship it kicked off to a very kind of funny beginning. Carm.
Yes.
You want to tell the audience?
Well, and I've got no beef with Scottie Pippen. I love Scottie Pippen. I mean, I do. You know, but it's funny when you start to read, and, you know, Colley tweeted it, the Bulls have sort of alienated Michael and Scottie and Jimmy Butler. Well, let's be careful. The day Scottie Pippen begged the Bulls for a job to be an ambassador,
they finally agreed, and they said, okay. When they got back to the players' entrance at the stadium, he said, drive me to the – I'm sorry, when they got back to the main entrance by the Jordan statue, this is long before the renovations, and there were fans congregating as they always do outside the Jordan statue, he said, drive me to the other side of the building. I don't want to talk to any of the fans. I mean, it's like, wait, what? Didn't we just have a lunch where you agreed that you're going to be an ambassador? So, I mean, let's not get carried away, people. Well, yeah, I mean, come on.
When you told me the first time, I chuckled and laughed. You just agreed to it. You basically signed on. And then the first time push comes to shove and you're going to be pressed into that ambassador's role. Well, you know, the other side of the building here. I ain't got time to talk to people.
And somehow the Bulls did wrong by Scotty. I mean, give me a break. So let's try to keep some of the facts straight.
Yeah, I guess we'll put some perspective.
Some perspective.
Scotty's doing well. He's doing television.
He's fine.
He's on the West Coast.
He's fine.
Probably not available as much as the Bulls would like to go, and they'll move on and they'll get themselves another ambassador.
Correct. Yes. Speaking of the Bulls, we got, again, two Twitter polls to vote on. One is on my timeline. One is on Yurko's timeline.
Mine's a big one.
Yurko's got this great 12-4 matchup today, the Battle of Impact Guys, he terms it, on his Twitter timeline at Yurko64.
Isn't that a nice way to term it?
That is. The 12-seeded Javi Baez home run to score the only run in the first game of the postseason in 2016, the game against the Giants, versus the 4-seed Dexter Fowler's leadoff home run in Game 7 of the World Series to kind of set the tone. This is a great battle. I actually, again, went with the 12 seed that upset the 5 and is now going to try to pull a second upset. I don't know that it's going to happen. I voted for the Baez home run against San Fran. That's getting 40% of the vote. 60% of the vote is going to Dexter Fowler's Game 7 home run in the World Series. So make sure you vote, Yurk.
I wish I could vote.
Everybody else, you know.
Yeah, everybody else go ahead and vote. You feel retweet that, guys. Get it out to as many as possible.
Oh, I already
1900
did.
And change. Yesterday's poll, if I could find it. Where the hell did it go?
And what advanced yesterday, Yurk?
Yesterday was the advancement of...
It was the final out, right?
Yeah, the final out, the number one seed.
And that's the one seed. So the one seed marches on.
28. We had 1,988 votes. Didn't quite get to the 2,000 mark.
Yes.
But, Carm, the champion of this one's going to play the White Sox champion from earlier this year?
Correct.
And that's going to be a doozy, kid. Mm-hmm. We're going to be sending out everything.
The one seed won in my White Sox bracket from 05, and that was Paul Konerko's grand slam in Game 2. So we'll see what ends up winning Yurko's bracket. We still have more to come next week, but you got the 12-4 matchup today, so make sure you vote on Yurko's timeline. Then on my timeline, while you're at Twitter, at Carmen DeFalco, since we're talking so much about the Bulls and the Last Dance, and it's going to be fun to continue to talk about it in the coming weeks. And remember, all of our coverage, all of our conversations about The Last Dance are presented by Coors Light. Stay inside. Buy your Coors Light right from your couch online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill. Beer right to the house. You don't have to leave. And in the time of coronavirus and COVID-19 and quarantine and social distancing, this is a good thing. Get.coorslight.com. And so my Twitter poll today is, of the teams the Bulls beat to win a title during the dynasty, which was the best? The 93 Suns, the 96 Sonics, either Jazz team, and then I did put other, and I welcome people to respond to me if you're voting other with either that 91 Lakers team or that 92 Trailblazers team. Either of the Jazz teams is winning the web poll right now, the Twitter poll, with 52.4% of the vote. The 93 Suns getting 22.7%, the 96 Sonics getting 17.8%, and then either the Lakers or the Trailblazers getting 7%. And just going through my timeline, I'm getting the most on the 91 Lakers. It seems like people think the easiest team they beat was that 92 Trailblazers team. At least that's what I can gauge from the audience that is participating right now.
You haven't done it either. You know, that's the first time you did it. You got over the hurdle. You climbed the mountain, Carm. You got to the peak of K2 in the Himalayas. I mean, the first time you do it, that's the greatest challenge of all. You know, the rest of the times that you do it, I guess it's a challenge, but is it really a challenge, you know? So I think that's why people vote for the L.A. Lakers.
Yeah, maybe you're right. And that Laker team still had Magic. Even though Magic was a little bit older at that point, maybe his best days were behind him. But Magic was still awfully good. You still had James Worthy. You know, Byron Scott, if memory serves, was kind of banged up in those plays, certainly in that last series. I don't think Byron Scott even played in game five.
He didn't. He also was terrible in the series.
Yeah.
I just finished watching every game from that series. He was awful.
If I remember, he was hurt, but and that could have had something to do with it.
He definitely missed a game. Yeah.
And he missed that last game. Yep. You know, but I would.
So did Worthy. Worthy missed game five.
And Worthy missed game five. That's right. That's right, Chris. I would vote for either the 93 Suns, and I can't vote. This is my Twitter poll. The 93 Suns team or one of those Jazz teams. That 93 Suns team was really good. I mean, you had prime Charles Barkley, who was a force throughout the playoffs that year. I mean, he was absolutely insane. He was insanely good in the Western Conference Finals that year. You know, you had Kevin Johnson. You had Dan Majerle. There was not much left, I guess, in the Tom Chambers at that point. He was coming off the bench. But they had a really good team in 93. And Barkley was probably the best player they ever beat. Some might argue Malone a little bit later, but prime Barkley in 93, don't you think Yerk might have been the best player they ever beat to win a title?
Yeah, Matt, you got Magic in his 12th season, I believe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess 13, Chuck in his prime, yeah, I'll take that. He's probably the best.
So
go think of that 96 Sonics team.
That, well, you had prime Kemp and Gary Payton and Detlef Schrempf. They were good. Look, that was a 64. That was a 64-win team. Yeah, the glove that beat the Jazz in seven games in the conference finals to get there in 96.
What was on Sean Kemp's mind, though? Did he have more than three children at the time?
I don't know.
He already at nine.
He might have been already at nine, but he was awfully good still, prime Sean Kemp that year.
I want to find out, because when you got those kinds of concerns, you know, your games might be a little bit off.
If you'd like to debate it with us, feel free. 312-332-3776. So jump in and talk with us today as we get you set for the weekend. And speaking of The Last Dance, Jason Hare, I hope I'm saying Jason's name right. He is the director of this docuseries. He was on with Waddle and Sylvie yesterday. He had some great stuff to say about meeting Michael and the filming of all this. We're going to play a little bit of that for everybody coming up next.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
If you miss something, the podcast, is out there. The all-new ESPN Chicago app is here. Get it now.
Heard this in a while. Well, we heard it last week as a rejoin, this song, and I said this was on one of the FIFA games, and the Twitter world let me know that was FIFA 98. That was right in my FIFA playing prime. Yeah, old school. It's Carmen and Yurko. Hope everyone's having a great Friday. Snow's not too bad, you know, didn't really stick by us again, just on the grass, on the trees a little, but not really on the roads. And it's
I'll take a Twitter picture for you guys here at the next break to let you get a look at what it looks like here by Johnny Handsome's place. We're going to get hit a little bit harder than you guys did, but our streets are clean, I think.
Yeah, good. And the good news is it'll all be gone by later tonight or tomorrow. It's going to be in the 50s all weekend. It looks like some 60s next week. So that's the, it sucks when the snow's falling in April, but at least it goes away quickly. So,
but it's good for the grass, kid.
It is good for the grass.
It is good for the grass.
I agree with that. This hour with Carmen and Yurko is brought to you by Manscaped. The Lawnmower 3.0 is the perfect tool for a safe and satisfying Manscaped job. Get 20% off and free shipping with the discount code Chicago. So Judd Bushler will join us in about 25 minutes. Jason Hare is the director of The Last Dance docuseries, which is going to begin airing Sunday night on ESPN. We can't wait for that. Jason's going to join Waddle and Sylvie, it looks like, every Monday going forward to recap what we see. He joined them yesterday with a little sneak peek. And we want to play a few sound bites. This is Jason Hare, the director, talking about why Jordan wanted to do the documentary.
Michael was already on board when I was approached. But it's interesting to note, and I don't want to speak for Michael here, this is pure conjecture, but just over the three interviews that we've spent and the 8 hours I've spent talking to him, it would surprise me if it wasn't due in some part to the fact that that season that he agreed to do this was when the Golden State Warriors won 73 games and when LeBron James went back to Cleveland and won a title for them. And all of a sudden, this discussion was starting to be had on these talk shows and the interminable talk shows that where people are screaming at each other in the morning on TV. Are the Warriors better than the Bulls? Are the 2016 Warriors better than the 96 Bulls? they eclipse Michael Jordan's 72 wins. Are they better than him? Is LeBron James as great or greater than Michael Jordan? We'll be right back to talk about that for 3 hours. I think I have a feeling that probably grated at him. Now, in his defense, he's the last guy who would engage in a discussion like that, especially in public. He has no interest. For all of his prolific accomplishments, he's surprisingly reticent to talk about his own greatness. He will talk about specific games where he performed great, and he remembers. He has a photographic memory for these games. So when we break down the Craig Elo game and, of course, the shot in 98 and, you know, dozens of other games during the course of this series, he remembered everything. I read over 10,000 pages and studied for 2 years for this project, and he was correcting me on some of the stats that I had memorized, and he was right. So, but he's very reticent to say that he's better than anybody or worse than anybody. He just doesn't want to be involved in that discussion. So it's pure conjecture, but I have a feeling that he knew on several levels that this was the right time to tell the story.
Interesting to hear him put it that way, especially all we know about Michael and sort of the attitude and what's driven him for his amazing, illustrious career on the basketball court. Here's a story that Jason tells about meeting. I think this is about the first meeting with Michael, right, guys, leading up to this whole thing. How about he said he read 10,000 pages and studied for 2 years to prepare for the interview process and putting this docuseries together. So this was Jason here yesterday with Waddle and Sylvie on the first meeting with Michael.
Meeting him for the first time happened way before we rolled cameras, and I got a call out of the blue from Esty Portnoy, who's been his manager for over 25 years, and she is his trusted advisor, and Curtis Polk is as well. And I had been working with Curtis and Esty for almost a year on planning this project and exactly what it would be and kind of spitballing ideas and putting things together very slowly because it takes a long time for these things to develop. Out of nowhere, I get a call at about 6:30 on a Wednesday night. Can you make it up to Midtown? Michael would like to have a drink. You got to be here by 7. There's no way, short of a science fiction novel, to get from where I live to Midtown Manhattan in a half hour. So I quickly got out of my gym clothes and into something acceptable, and I texted a buddy of mine and said, here's what's going on in my life right now, and I explained the situation. And he said to me, wow, what drink do you order when you first meet Michael Jordan?
That's awesome.
And I was like, oh, I don't want to swear on terrestrial radio, but I was like, oh, man, and I got to think about that. Okay, so that was on my mind. It was surreal. I went from being, at that point, a 41-year-old filmmaker to a 10-year-old fan, you know? So you got to compose yourself and straighten your spine up a little bit and go in there and make an impression. But it's like talking to Santa Claus. You've heard of this guy. You've seen images of him. He's someone that you idolized your entire childhood, but he's not a real person. He's not a human being. He doesn't exist. He's just a figment of everybody's imagination. It's like all of a sudden if the Statue of Liberty came to life and reached down and shook your hand. That's what it was like meeting him. So we were talking for a while. He's a charismatic guy, and there was a moment about 15 minutes in when we started talking about his Hall of Fame speech, because I said to him, you know, there's a lot of misperceptions about you out there, and part of this doc, I want to give you the chance to clear up those misperceptions. And I brought up the Hall of Fame speech and all the criticism he got for that. He leaned forward and put his elbows on his knees, and he put that huge forefinger out in front of his face. And it was almost cinematic because we're in this dark lobby lounge of this hotel. And this the light cast onto his face, and it glinted off this big hoop earring. And this huge 2-foot forefinger was pointing at me. He said, who do you think the only guy is who understood what I was trying to say on that stage? I saw the hoop earring and that huge finger, and that's the first time it occurred to me, oh, my God, that's Michael Jordan. I had been talking to him for 20 minutes, but immediately you could see him. There was a change came over him, and it was like, whoa, that's the guy right there. So it was surreal, and the answer to that, by the way, is Pat Riley. But wow. It was surreal. But to his credit, you know, he knows who he is. I said to him, listen, man, I was born in 1976. I'm a child of the 80s and 90s. I had your poster on my walls. Like, you know that I idolized you. And I said to him that it's got to be really bizarre at one of these meetings. I said it's going to be really bizarre that anyone who meets you is either awestruck or pretending not to be, unless they're in your inner circle. And I get that he has people in his inner circle. But anyone. He is, you know, he's supernatural when it comes to sports heroes. So, like I said, though, to his credit, he made it. He became a human being much quicker than you would imagine someone like that would be, and that's a testament to his charisma and a testament to his upbringing. I mean, there's a lot of people who are a lot less famous than him that have gone off the deep end because they couldn't handle that amount of attention and that amount of adulation and pressure. Yeah. And Michael, to this day, is a guy that you could hang out and have what. To answer your question, I ordered a Jameson on the rocks. So you can have a Jameson on the rocks with him, and you can talk about his Hall of Fame speech and talk about Jerry Krause, and you can talk about the current state of the Hornets and anything else, which is what we discussed that first hour. But it was really just to volley back and forth and see if we had a rapport. But that was kind of the last meeting that I had to have before this thing actually took off and we started to shoot.
That's an amazing story. Do we respect the fact that he went simple and just got a Jameson on the rocks? I mean, some people might want to order the most expensive wine on the menu or, you know, a $200 glass of, you know, 18-year or 25-year rare scotch, right? You know, like, hey, Mike, I'm having a drink with Michael. I'm going to show off a little. I think there's something simple in ordering a Jameson on the rocks, Yurko.
There's something wonderfully simple with that. Irish whiskey, solid.
Right.
Whether you went Irish whiskey, you went Crown Royal, went with your rum and coke, you go with your staple, whatever you're most comfortable with.
Yeah.
In high-stress situations, always go with what you're most comfortable with and what you know you can handle throughout what might be a 20-minute encounter, maybe a two-hour encounter.
That's a really good story. Jason obviously is adept at storytelling, and that's going to be a treat to hear him react every Monday with Waddle and Sylvie. So remember, if you ever miss anything and if you want the entire interview from yesterday, there's more great stuff from it. Check out the podcast. Make sure you download the ESPN Chicago app. You need to have that, and you can find all of our podcasts there. Judd Bushler will join us coming up in about 15. We'll do some trending next, 312-332-3776. If you want to join us to talk about the weekend, the last dance, which of the Bulls teams that they beat in all those different six finals, five teams, obviously, or five franchises, which was the best team, we're willing to listen and debate and talk about it with you today. It's Carmen and Yurko. We'll be right back.
Carmen and Yurko.
Follow at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64 on Twitter.
On ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
We'll do some trending here in a minute. Carmen and Yurko getting you set for the weekend. It's not nice today, but it looks like it's going to be halfway decent for the weekend, so that's good. Get outside, grill a little bit, barbecue, play catch with the kids, shoot baskets. Let's go to Elliot and Elgin on ESPN 1000. Hey, Elliot.
How are we doing, guys?
Great. How are you?
Great. How are you, Elliot?
Oh, fine these days. To answer your question, so back in 1993, I'm 9, 10 years old watching the Bulls battle the Phoenix Suns. And I was a kid, you know, I was a young kid back then, formidable. Very formidable age, and that was the only I vividly remember. That was the only opponent that I feared that the Bulls could lose to, because you had number 9 Dan Majerle, you had number 24 Danny Ainge, two sharpshooters that would knock down anything and everything. Then you had the slasher KJ, number 7. Then you had number 34, the centerpiece Barkley, who was in his absolute prime.
Yeah,
think Zion Williamson before Zion, but probably a little bit better shooter at that time. I was like, you know what? The Bulls are going to go down to this team. This team is unbelievable. And then, of course, we had number 5, John Paxson, knocked down that shot. And number 3 was in the books.
Had that not happened, yeah, Game 7 would have been tough. I agree. Elliot, thanks. Having to play Game 7 there, I've mentioned a few times before, I was at Game 5 in Chicago at the old stadium. I was there with my dad and my brothers. I was fortunate to see Michael's last ever competitive game at the United Center, because by the time he had come back, they had moved into the new building. And when they lost that game, it was uneasy, you know. And then had the game on Father's Day, that was a Friday night. The game 2 days later on that Sunday, on that Father's Day, you know, Pax bails him out, hits the shot. If they had lost that game, having to beat Barkley in a Game 7 out there would have been tough. I do think he's the best player they ever beat. That might have been the best team. Someone on Twitter pointed out It was a little bit easier maybe in that final series without Cedric Ceballos. Ceballos did not play in that series, but and he was a young, athletic, you know, scorer at the time. But, man, I think Barkley was the best player that they ever had to beat. And that whole season was good. That Knicks team was awesome that they had to play in the conference finals the series before York. They were down 2-0 in that series and came back to win 4 in a row and beat that Knicks team. They were incredible defensively that year, the New York Knicks. So they beat some tough teams along the way, for sure.
Danny Ainge hit everything that he looked at. He shot 41% from the field in the playoffs. 41% from three-point range, I should say.
From three-point, yeah.
From two-point range, he was only 34%. So let him shoot from two, not from three.
How about that?
In 93, and you would have been better. I mean, he's 7 percentage points better from the three-point line than he was from two. So I always look that up when somebody says, you know, he was unconscious and he never missed. I had to look it up real quick just to see whether that was true or not. But that 41.3% clip from three-point line is a pretty darn good clip.
Yeah, he and Marley could bomb.
You know, and the Suns got a good look. I mean, Horace blocked it, but Kevin, KJ, I mean.
Yep.
And then, in the series, the final series, when the Jordan hit the shot, the sixth title, John Stockton got a point-blank look to a three-point.
Remember, Malone coughed up the ball, too. That led to that Bulls possession where they would take the lead. That was huge. Yep. Michael stripped it away, and Rodman, I think, came up with it. Let's go to Sean in Woodridge. What's up, Sean?
Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Hey, hanging in there through these tough times.
Good.
Real quick, yes, 93, Barkley was the MVP that year, actually won the MVP that year. But I would make an argument that the best teams the Bulls ever beat, and mind you, I'm biased because I'm from Detroit, were the 91 Pistons. The Pistons were coming off 2 consecutive NBA championships. I don't know how many consecutive conference finals, I think 4 at that point. And the Pistons had to overcome the Celtics, the Larry Bird Celtics. And then the Bulls, at that time, the Eastern Conference was crazy. Then they had to overcome the Isaiah Thomas Pistons.
Yeah.
And then overcome the Lakers, who the Pistons had already overcome. The Pistons beaten them. I mean, the Pistons went to 3 straight championship series and lost the first one, but then beat the Lakers twice in a row. And so while I do think that Suns team was pretty great in those Utah Jazz teams with Carmelo and Stockton were great. I think if there was any one particular team that they had to beat to get on their run, I think it was the 91 Pistons.
Well said, Sean. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate it. Somebody on Twitter said, I know the way I termed it was, you know, to win the actual title. So we were talking about the Western Conference opponent. But somebody said that 92 Knicks team that took the Bulls to 7 games, that 92 team was maybe even better than the 93 Knicks team. So anybody that says, well, they didn't really beat anybody or the competition now is much better. And, hey, you know me. I'm all about living in the moment. I do think athletes get better. And I do think that the athletes in today's NBA produce a whole different kind of challenge that athletes 20, 30 years ago were not familiar with. The Bulls never had to play a player like Kevin Durant or LeBron James, plain and simple. Those players didn't exist. Just like the 60s Celtics didn't have to play a player like Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. It just the sports evolve, the players evolve, and they get better and better. So I get it, but I think that there was a lot of good competition that they had to face along the way. There was a lot of good competition in this conference between the Pistons and those Knicks teams. Those Knicks teams were great. Believe it or not, there was a time when the Knicks were great, and that seems hard to believe now if you're young because they've stunk for the better part of 20 years. But there was a time when they were great, and they were tough, and they were nasty, and they played incredible defense. And so they did have to face a lot of tough challenges along the way. Mark, let's do a quick trending. What's happening in the world of social media, my man?
Boys, how are you?
Great.
What's trending brought to you by Trend Micro, the leader in cybersecurity, protecting over 500,000 companies worldwide. Visit trendmicro.com/ESPN for more info. So we had Allie Quigley on yesterday. She lost HORS to HOR to Zach LaVine, who then lost in the finals to Mike Conley Jr., last night, so he wins the horse competition.
Don't you have to lose HORSE?
Well, I'm saying that. I'm sorry.
What kind of horse you riding, kid?
Yeah. So Allie quickly got Zach LaVine to get HOR. Is what I'm saying.
Got
my bad.
Okay.
My bad.
She lost HORSE to HOR.
Right. Exactly.
Yes, got it.
Yes. Let's see here. Another NFL player has coronavirus.
Who's that?
Vaughn Miller.
Oh wow.
And he's probably speaking right now. I think he was going to speak today at 1 or 2 o'clock. I can't remember what time.
Okay.
I have a feeling a lot of people have had this coronavirus and have not realized they've had it.
I think Yurko's right.
Yeah, so.
Carm, we mentioned this in our pre-show meeting that the Lions are open to trading the number three pick, which would be very interesting.
Yeah, they're open for business. Bob Quinn said, well we've had conversations going back to the combine. We're taking calls. We'll continue to take calls next week. So somebody might go up and get that pick.
The NFL said they're willing to stop the clock on next Thursday and Friday. Saturday, I don't know how much they even do that. But on Thursday and Friday, if there is technical issues, obviously we're in a whole new world with how we're doing the NFL draft. So they might stop the clock and let teams figure things out, you know, if there's computer glitches. And they're going to do a mock draft on Monday to do kind of like a trial run.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they got to have a contingency in place, right, if there's some sort of technical difficulty. So they'll
be
ready for
that. Any draft I've been involved in that has just a computer-only draft from a remote distance or from a remote area, I've had problems with. So anybody who's drafted with me know that there's been problems anytime there's a computer involved. You got to log in. You got to do all the screwy stuff.
Yeah, we'll
so
see.
This is what you're going to have. If they do it, they stop the clock, they get it situated, then they go back. So
all right. I have a question. Will they be? Will we be able to see as viewers of the draft? Can we see when someone leaves the chat? Like on this on the panel on ESPN's TV broadcast, like will we see when the Lions get kicked off from their Wi-Fi, and can we be like, oh,
the Lions are off the Wi-Fi?
They've left the chat.
If the clock stops, you know something's
yeah, you know something's amiss. That's funny. We're gonna find out next Thursday.
What's going on here?
When we come back, we'll talk to Jeb Buschler. Thoughts about that second three-peat, the '98 team, and the Last Dance. We'll do that coming up next. We're back in 2 minutes.